We are discussing the third dimension of life, which is humanhood, and how to live in it while you are functioning out of the fourth dimension. If we look at the lesson of the Bible, not as an isolated chapter here and an isolated chapter there, not even as an Old Testament or a New Testament, but rather as a living lesson about a living God, you may find that you actually are Adam, and that you actually are the Christ that came to Jesus. And the period from Adam, the first man, to Christ Jesus, that first man coming into the realization of self, represents the same period that you must go through in order to fulfill yourself. You come into a world, and to all visible eyes, to all visible knowledge, you bring nothing into this world. And yet, that is one of the first truths we learn, that we bring something into this world. We do not come in empty-handed at all. And we find much evidence of that in such lights as Chopin, for example, who at the age of two, or Mozart, was it, at the age of two, had this tremendous musical talent. And we learn that you do not come in starting as a beginner, you come in with your consciousness, the consciousness that you had before this particular experience you had, and now you come back with a higher consciousness, or perhaps a lower one if you have walked in the wrong direction. And then when we look at Jesus, we see that this man who walked the earth blessing the world around him had at an early age a capacity far beyond his elders. And we see there that neither did he come into this world then for the first time. Actually, I had been wondering about this. What were the incarnations of Jesus before he appeared as that which was called the Son of God? I had a little light on it, if any, but a book came across my attention, and it was the Edgar Cayce book on the incarnations of Jesus. And we find, according to Cayce, that Jesus actually was Joseph in Egypt. Jesus was Enoch. Jesus was Zend, the father of Zoroaster. Jesus was Joshua, and according to Cayce, Jesus was Melchizedek, who came to Abraham and revealed the power of one who had never been born or died. Now, whether you give credence to these or not, the fact is that that consciousness which walked the earth as Jesus was not born one day and suddenly appeared, any more than the leaf on a tree suddenly appears without having been born within that tree first. And so it was, going back before Abraham, I am, he said, and this was Melchizedek, the Christ made manifest as man, coming through the famines of Egypt. It was Joseph, the enlightened one, who was able to bring them food. Always you're seeing the symbolism that he who is in the Christ consciousness is without lack or limitation. And so Adam, the first man, unknowing of his true self, goes through the various experiences in the Bible and passes out of the picture, but now he returns. And he returns again and again and again in a new face, a new body. Ultimately, his name is Jesus. But now there is something new. This Jesus has discovered the mysteries of life. He has walked through the divided consciousness which every man walks through. And now he emerges as the one consciousness. And this one consciousness walks the earth free of the divisions which we all face. But man doesn't understand Jesus, and so man worships Jesus the man. Man worships the very man who says, "Why do you call me good? Don't call me Lord, Lord. Don't love me and worship me, but do what I say." The multitudes followed him because they wanted healings. They said, "There's been no greater on earth than he. Let me touch him." But did they want his message? Repeatedly, they came back for another healing. But his words, his meanings, what he symbolized, what he was teaching was lost. We're not losing that today. His teaching is crystal clear. There are two consciousnesses on this earth. One is the true of you and one is the false of you. And although you may feel that you would like a nice, comfortable way to find God, Jesus left it very clear to us that there is no easy, comfortable way to find God unless you want an abstract God to whom you can pray and say, "Dear God, I need help," and then wait for that help, whether it comes or not. He said, if you want a God who is a living God, not an abstraction, there's only one way. He said, you must make my flesh your flesh and my blood your blood. And this meant a total reliance upon the true consciousness, not the false. When you simmer the message down to a few words, Jesus was teaching us to get out of this body before it's buried. He was teaching us that this body in which we walk is a blend of the false and the true. And although it's a very difficult teaching at this point, we must learn to look out at the world and see something quite different than what our eyes usually see. We see people. We see forms. We see friends. We see enemies. He said, I'm sorry. If you want the kingdom of heaven, you must have a completely new way of looking out at this world. You must look out with a single eye. And the single eye does not see as you have been seeing. And many of the examples that he demonstrated were to show you the difference between the divided consciousness and the single eye. Take the withered arm. Now he's in the temple. A man comes in, his arm is withered. The Pharisees are there. Oh, and this is great for them. They're going to witness Jesus possibly breaking the law. They couldn't like anything better because it happens to be the Sabbath. This man with the withered arm is supposed to have been a stonemason. And in an accident, this occurred. He never could get rid of this withered arm. And now on a Sabbath, he comes to the temple and he says to Jesus, "Heal me." And one of the great institutions of Hebrew law was you don't work on the Sabbath. And so they're waiting gleefully. What's he going to do? And this is where you and I must see that what he did was a major teaching. He recognized no human Sabbath. This was a man-made law. Even though Moses has handed down this law. In fact, Moses had stood idly by while one was stoned who broke this law. And now this institution, which was reverenced throughout the Hebrew kingdom, he, the great teacher, was about to break. And the reason he did it is simple. They thought it was illegal, against the Hebrew law, against the law of God, to heal on the Sabbath. And he taught a higher law. It is against the law of God to witness a withered arm. There is no such thing. The reason he could witness that there is no withered arm is because he had within himself eliminated the second consciousness. There was no two consciousnesses there. There was not a divided consciousness. And I think it's important that you see the meaning of a divided consciousness. It will also show you a different person than the one you usually see. Take yourself. We are all a divided consciousness, every one of us. There is in us only divinity. And yet, in spite of it, this divinity is obscured by the imitation of divinity, the imitation divine image, the human image. This human image is composed of two forces. Your divine spiritual self and the passage of the world mind with its impression of your divine self over this divine self makes the two consciousnesses. You are composed now of divine consciousness, which is yourself, and of the universal consciousness, which is the world imitation of yourself. The fusion of these two makes the form. And when you look out, although you see a form, you're seeing the fusion of the divine consciousness and the universal belief about that divine consciousness, and that's the form you're looking at. It's your form, your neighbor's form, your child's form, your parent's form, your husband and your wife's form. You're looking at a level of consciousness which appears as form. And just for mathematics' sake, we'll say that 1 degree of divine consciousness is coming through and 99 degrees of world belief is coming through, and that's the form in front of you. And someone may be a little higher and have 2% of divine consciousness coming through and 98% of world belief. But everywhere you're looking, you're not seeing what is there. You're seeing this fusion. And it's important to learn to look at every form with the realization that what is there is not what is appearing. What is appearing is mostly world belief in form. But that individual is here to do exactly what the first Adam was here to do, and eventually did. And that is to come into the realization that the tree of life, which is divine consciousness, and the tree of good of evil, which is world belief, have merged to create the appearance of man called Adam. And Adam doesn't know it. And each of us is that one who doesn't know it. And so we are here to lift the degree of divinity that comes through and to decrease the degree of universal belief that comes through, so that ultimately you'll be 10% divine and 90% universal belief, then 20 and 80 and 70 and 30 and so forth, until you reach that point where Christ is born, a place where you become aware that the divine self is my being, And now I must erase through integrity to self that degree of world belief which shows forth as me. You're recognizing that the universal forms we see are nothing but universal thought outpictured. And yet, when divinity is understood and sown to within, as we build an inner consciousness, not in the sense mind, but an inner consciousness, this slowly releases the degree of world belief that is showing forth as our form and puts substance into our experience. Now, Jesus had accomplished all this. And so by the time the man came forth with a withered arm, he was looking at a form as the world sees it in divided consciousness, an imperfect form, a form composed of largely world belief appearing as a man with a withered arm. And the degree of divine consciousness that was present in the man was minimized. And all around him, those who would say you cannot work on the Sabbath were perfectly content to accept the reality of this evil. But he was teaching that my Father worketh hitherto. Right here where these Pharisees see a withered arm, where the world consciousness accepts a withered arm, there is also the Christ consciousness, the single eye, which does not accept the possibility that there is darkness where God is. And now we have the Christ consciousness looking at the withered arm. It says, I'm not going to give you another arm. I'm not going to trade arms with you. I'm not going to discuss logic with you. I'm not going to teach you anything. I'm not going to have a discussion with you. I'm not going to go through all the Mosaic law and teach you about the Spirit. But rather, I will sow directly to the Spirit of you, recognizing, as we all must come to recognize, that the withered arm is not there. It is world belief formed. Stretch forth thine arm. Now you will say, why, if all he said was stretch forth thine arm, did the man stretch forth his arm then, and why couldn't he have done it before? And so let us take a telephone conversation as an example. Now you are speaking on the telephone here to your friend in Chicago. Now there's nothing that friend in Chicago can hear except what you say from this side of the phone here. If you speak loudly, he will hear it loudly. If you say hello, he will hear hello. Everything that you do here will come out there, but nothing can come out there unless you do it here. And you have that same privilege in spiritual consciousness. Whatever was in the consciousness that looked at that withered arm had to come out in the individual who had the withered arm. Now see the invisible connection between Jesus, as if he were on the telephone, but his thoughts are on the telephone, not his words. His consciousness is on the telephone, not his words. And he is knowing the truth. And the truth that he knows goes over that telephone and appears in Chicago just as his voice would. The truth that you know goes through your consciousness into the consciousness of the one who has come to you. And that truth in your consciousness becomes the truth in the consciousness of the other individual. And because the truth is that there is no withered arm, the withered arm disappears. It's just like a telephone connection. It's one consciousness not communicating with the other consciousness. It's the consciousness here appearing there as that same consciousness, because there is only one invisible consciousness, God consciousness. Now, this was mystifying. How could a withered arm disappear? This was some kind of chicanery. But the teaching was that God is not abstract. You don't pray to God in heaven. You recognize God as present everywhere, perfect now. And finally, it would take us another 5,000 years, perhaps, individually, if we worked without the inner revelation of Spirit itself, to learn that he was teaching right then and there that the fourth dimension of consciousness is always present wherever you are. If you're a Pharisee and cannot see it because you are in divided consciousness, you will call it a miracle or witchcraft. But if you have the single eye which knows the fourth dimension of consciousness is here, now, you will also know something else. We have been trying from the fourth to live in the fourth while in the third. And now you must come to the place where you see there is no third dimension of consciousness. It simply doesn't exist. It is a false consciousness. It is the illusory consciousness. The third dimension of consciousness cannot exist. All that you see in the third dimension of consciousness has no reality. The world that you see is the third dimension of consciousness. But the fourth dimension of consciousness, which is Christ invisible, is the only consciousness that is present here today. We may bring the illusion of a third dimension of consciousness. We may bring a withered arm. We may bring a defective ear. We may bring a defective eye. We may bring a defective back. But these are from the divided consciousness. The two that are in the field. And one must go. There cannot be two masters serving in your consciousness. Now, to do this, you cannot live the life you're accustomed to. The change is significant and quite revolutionary. The change requires the knowledge that you cannot ever honor the third dimension of consciousness without separating yourself from reality. In you are the two levels of consciousness, the one true and the imitation of the true. And now your only responsibility on this earth is to eliminate the second consciousness that is within you, called the human, the mortal, the limited, the one that moves in time and space. When you were taught to impersonalize, up to this moment, our impersonalizations have been incomplete. We have not really learned how to impersonalize. But we're reaching the point now where, however difficult, many of us are prepared to accept a hard truth. Now, you will find that if you can accept that you are comprised of only divinity, there is no other self than your divine self, You must know, therefore, that whatever appears as imperfect in your life must be a lie. And that lie comes about because your divine self is crossed by world belief, and this out pictures as the imperfection or the lie, which up to now we more or less have accepted, even though we had learned it wasn't there. Now you must impersonalize four ways. And I'd like you to remember these four ways, for the power in them is very great. The world around you isn't happening. It seems to be. This may not mean much to you at the moment, but there will come a time when the non-happening of that around you will suddenly steal into your consciousness in a very unique way. And that moment of truth will be hastened if you will follow these four steps. When you impersonalize, well, let's take a specific case. Let's take that withered arm. Let's take a withered arm that is confronting us right now as a case at hand. We will impersonalize first time. There is no time in spirit. There is no time when a withered arm could have happened. There is no time in which it can exist. Therefore, there is no time in which a person can be suffering from a withered arm. You're beginning to see that time is part of the false consciousness. So you remove time from your belief. Now you remove place. You impersonalize place. There's no place where a withered arm can be. There is no place in spirit. Place is finite. Place has boundaries. There are no boundaries in spirit. We remove the belief in time. We remove the belief in space. We are impersonalizing time and now space. And now we are impersonalizing person. This that appears before me as withered arm is but the fusion of the divine with its overshadowing of the world belief. The divine is not matter. The divine is not physical. The divine is incorporeal. The divine is all. The false shadow of form is world belief formed. We impersonalize person. We impersonalize material being. We impersonalize material form. We are removing in our consciousness the belief in time, place, and material form. And finally, our fourth impersonalization is the removal of the belief in material condition. There is no time, place, form, or condition in Christ consciousness. To us, that's a slow learning process. To the one called Jesus, it was an instantaneous knowledge born of all of the incarnations in truth, leading up to the final total realization of the divine self. The single eye looking out only at the perfect universe. This cannot be. All that stands there is the perfect invisible divine self misperceived. Now, when you impersonalize time, place, person, and condition, you will find you're left with a great hollow. But that hollow is the removal of the universal world beliefs. And it's the beginning of a very strange new kind of stillness. A stillness that may even ache a little bit. Because in this stillness, it isn't just the stillness that you bring about by saying, I'm going to be still now. This is a stillness that falls into a new groove. This is a stillness in which the world is still. All around you is a vast, almost infinite stillness, and you're somewhere in the center of it, but not very clearly defined. You're even part of the stillness. You're breaking the dream. You're breaking the dream of the divided consciousness which has presented to us a self that is born and must die, a physical being. You're crossing out the third dimension of consciousness which never existed as reality. And you're coming into the recognition that only the God consciousness exists. Only the fourth dimension of consciousness exists around you. Nothing else. And if this becomes your experience, you'll never forget it. You'll remember it sufficiently so that as you walk through this world, you will know I am not walking in the third dimension of consciousness at all. It isn't here. It's the myth. I am consciously in the fourth dimension, for that is my name. I am the fourth dimension of consciousness. I am the spirit. And the material world, which was born of the divided consciousness, loses its potency. Its validity, its power to mold you, its power to cause you fear, concern, and anxiety. You recognize the non-presence of the third dimension of consciousness called mortality. This vast stillness becomes an insulating factor. Nothing can enter this stillness. It is a stillness you have never experienced except through the realization that all that exists is the divine self. And then all evil on the earth for you has no meaning. It is just something you see, but it is not reality. It is not ordained, it is not upheld, it is not part of the experience of the Christ consciousness. In him is no darkness at all. Now we are all working toward this stillness. And one of the great mystifying things about it is that even at this moment, the human mind cannot acclimate itself to the drastic change that is required of it. Even at this moment, no matter how strange it may be to hear that I am an incorporeal being, the mind does not really know what that means. The mind cannot make its adjustment. It cannot be sudden. It must be gradual. It must be a slow, daily sowing to the spiritual self. If you try to hurdle this in a night or a year or five, you find it is too awkward. Because you're going to come to a place that you've never been in. A place that I'd like you to recognize now. You're going to have to see that when somebody gets on the phone to call you, that it isn't happening. It isn't happening. You're going to have to come to a place, however startling, where you learn that you are not breathing. It isn't happening. Your heart is not beating. It isn't happening. Nothing that you think is happening in spirit. And when you come to this zero, it won't be because you heard somebody say it or read it in a book. But at least you'll be alerted to the fact that when it does happen in your experience, that you're not going crazy. When you know that you are not living as a human being with a breathing lung and a pumping heart and a thinking brain, you will be very sane, more sane than any man who walked the earth before Jesus. For when he came to that realization, he was the firstborn. And believe it or not, we are all going to come to that realization before we step out of the mortal mold. When you practice the allness of God, you do so without the realization that that means the nothingness of me. Now we must learn to practice the nothingness of me. That is the only way you honor God supremely. At first, it's a dark, dark night. You realize then that impersonalizing time, space, person, matter, condition, leaves you without a human selfhood. It leaves the world without a human selfhood. That's why there is a great transition of consciousness from Adam to Christ Jesus. The giving up of the belief in a human selfhood is impossible to a person who has not been touched by the Spirit. And even those who have been touched by the Spirit find that they want to cling to that human selfhood. It's all they know. They don't mind clinging to it if they can just get Spirit to function in their lives. But more and more and more and more, the Master impresses upon us, there's no place you can stop. If you want to enter the kingdom of heaven, the narrow gate is total reliance upon the Spirit, the complete willingness to drop all belief in a mortal universe, a material universe, this world. I can't say how many among you at this moment want to live that way. But it's necessary at this time to let those of you who want to live that way know that there must come the moment when you can see the nothingness of your human self, down to the point that you know you're not breathing. And after you've tried it, you might even say, well, that wasn't as difficult as I thought it would be. Something new happened. A new dimension of me was born when that happened. That's what you might say. You might see then what is the meaning of being reborn to the Spirit. This is how the false second self is slowly dissolved to reveal the immaculate nature of your being. We are sowing to the immaculate, which cannot be blended with anything else. There can be no degree of humanhood in the Immaculate. And so incarnation after incarnation had to precede before there could be a moment of an Immaculate Conception. And in that Immaculate Conception, one consciousness was the only one left on the field. There were two, and one was taken away. Jesus then walked the earth as the undivided consciousness. And the powers that he manifested are the powers of the undivided consciousness. The power to witness perfection where the world sees a withered arm is the power of the undivided consciousness that is available to all of us who want to walk through that narrow gate. Now, eating of my flesh and my blood then means not of the universal world belief, but of the divine. Fidelity to the divine of your being, standing still to the world that comes through you as opinions, beliefs and appearances, concepts. And this narrows us down. It narrows us down to such a point that we too find the meaning of the three temptations in a new way. We were told to forgive 70 times 7. And now we see it wasn't a demand on us that we be kind and big-hearted and compassionate at all. To forgive 70 times 7 meant to look out there and to see that all that's there is divinity. There's nothing big-hearted about it. It's the recognition of reality. There's no one there to forgive, and there's no one here to do the forgiving. All that is present is the fourth dimension, divine consciousness. Fidelity to that was the purpose behind the teaching, forgive 70 times 7. Now, when we go to Jesus, we find that he lived in fidelity to the highest possible truth on this earth, that there is naught but God. He recognized no divided consciousness, even in himself. And we must learn to do this. When within ourselves the tempter says, you have a withered arm, we must say to the tempter, who told you so? When the tempter within us says, you're getting old, we must say to the tempter, who told you so? When the tempter within us says, my daughter is growing up and I have to watch her very carefully, or else she'll become part of the new ways that I don't like very much, then you must say to the tempter, the only daughter I have is the true consciousness of God within myself. And that is the consciousness of that which you call my daughter. I recognize only the divine consciousness, and that is my daughter. There is no person there. There is no beating heart. There is only the spirit. And this is the immaculate conception of a daughter. Always, we are doing what the world cannot do, what no mortal mind can do, what logic will not do. We are translating the human scene. We are rejecting the tempter which says there is divinity, there is spirit, there is God, but there's also mortal being. And you know, it's very difficult to see, perhaps, but Jesus had already rejected the idea that there was Jesus. He had rejected the idea that there was God and Jesus. It was his overcoming of the belief that my name is Jesus and that I am Jesus, which enabled him to witness that there is no withered arm. If there was still a Jesus in his consciousness, the miracles that he was able to manifest to witness would have been impossible. He had to remove the belief in the divided consciousness which says there is divinity and me. And he couldn't be pantheistic and say, God is my being, even though I'm in the flesh. He couldn't say that tree out there is spirit. He had to know that the tree out there isn't there, but spirit is there. He had to know that the man with the withered arm wasn't there, but spirit was there. He had to know that Jesus wasn't there, but spirit was there. And we have to know that we are not here, but spirit is here. And then when we know that we are spirit, we're ready for that tempter. The tempter will then say to us, prove your spirit. And if you know your identity to be spirit, you will say to the tempter, to whom shall I prove it? There is naught but spirit. Well, show your great powers. Well, to whom shall I show these powers? You see, the tempter is the world mind in you. That which you have called your human mind is the tempter. And it's always challenging you to show your spiritual power. And whom shall you show that spiritual power to? This non-existent world mind? All there is your spirit. Everywhere. My spirit knows no boundaries, for my spirit is the spirit of God. The spirit of God. Whom shall tempt the spirit of God? Is there another to tempt? And so the temptation comes from non-existence seeming to be existent. The rejection of the temptation is the rejection of that which is non-existent. There is no tempter. The tempter is as much an illusion as water on the desert. And when you accept the tempter and wish to show the tempter your spiritual power, you might as well show that spiritual power to a mirage on the desert. And so the revelation of the rejecting of the tempter three times by Jesus is the revelation that there is only one self. There is no other to do the tempting and no other to be tempted. There is only one being. And that one being is always I am. Impersonalizing is a very nice word for crucifying. When you crucify time, place, person, conditions in person, you are meeting the tempter, the world mind, which has presented time, place, person, and condition to you. And you are saying to the world mind, my integrity to the one self of my being, to the undivided consciousness, has now reached the point where I can stand firm in the knowledge that I am not two. A divine and a mortal, spirit and matter, son of God and a human being. I eat only of the flesh and the blood of the invisible Christ. I walk in oneness in the realization that only the one is present. I'm not making withered arms disappear. I'm recognizing their non-reality. I'm not making cancers disappear. Recognizing their non-reality. Not making the problems of this world disappear. Recognizing their non-reality. We're getting behind the scenes to recognize that God is all and in Him is no darkness at all. And our work is to banish in us the thoughts, the beliefs, the seeds of concept that accept another life, another power, another activity than perfect divine activity. There is no other. The acceptance of another is the continuation of a divided consciousness. Now the mind begins to be very uncomfortable. It had expected that everything could be understood by it, and that if it did something, it would do it because it understood. But now it reaches an area where the things it hears are very uncomfortable. It doesn't want to hear that I'm not breathing. It doesn't want to hear that I'm not a mortal being. It wants something understandable. And at this stage you will find that whatever is understandable to the mind is untrue. If it's understandable to the mind, beware of it. It isn't the truth of God. Because there is a place where the truth of God is very upsetting to that mind. It's telling that mind, when you impersonalize, impersonalize yourself too. Get rid of yourself. You don't know truth. You're just the world mind, appearing in an individual as an individual mind. You've been the cause of all the trouble these many thousands of years. We begin to see that this mind is what folds up when we leave this plane. And when we return, we can't even remember we were here. Because it wasn't a mind at all. If it was a mind, it would remember. All of our sense mind is lost. The only thing we gain during this lifetime is that degree in which consciousness frees itself from the world belief that is in us. So that right now, perhaps, if you're 2% divine and 98% human, you might return 3% divine, having made one degree of progress during your whole 70 or 80 or 90 years. But the world consciousness is changing. And the degree of progress we had made in the past is not the degree of progress we can make in the present. It's possible today, right here, in the kingdom at hand, to dissolve the world consciousness in this incarnation. Provided you've been touched deeply enough to make your dedication without compromise. For instance, had you been caught in the temple with this withered arm requesting help, in the presence of the higher priests, some lesser man might have compromised. He could have even said to this withered arm, "Well, I'll meet you outside and we'll talk about it later." Or he could have said, "Come back tomorrow." But in our commitment to truth alone, we don't say, "Come back tomorrow," or "I'll meet you later." We meet the lie now when it appears, and wherever it appears. We meet it because we must be true to self. We must find self. We must overcome the unself that is the false, the limited, the one who is not my eternal being. And we find that is only a shell called the false consciousness. As soon as it is met by the truth, its falseness is revealed. When there is no truth in your consciousness to meet it, it continues and takes over your life. If you could shear away at this moment all of the falseness of your being, you would know that there is no place where you are not. Now, if you think this is difficult, be sure it will become more difficult. It will become so difficult that there will be a place where those who faint will want to turn back. And that is the place where those who have been touched are anxious to go. The place where the dark night of the soul truly begins is where you let go of the world consciousness within you, and with all total reliance on the invisible self, leaving all weapons behind, all reason, all logic, all fear, all doubt, you entrust yourself 100% to the self you feel you are, which is not living in this time or in this space or in this body or in this condition. And you see the shell that had pretended it was you. This total rejection of the false self is necessary before the real self can shine through. There's a totally different self waiting to reveal itself to the one who rejects the false self completely. And that complete rejection will come about as you practice the impersonalization of the false self in all qualities. If you thought your intelligence was limited, impersonalize that. It isn't. If you thought your lifespan was limited, impersonalize that. It isn't. If you thought your capacities in any direction were limited, impersonalize that. It isn't true. God is unlimited in life, in capacities, in intelligence. And I and the Father are one spirit. Remove all boundaries on every limiting factor in your life, in your integrity to self. Remove the belief that a boundary is real. Remove the belief that you walk in a space. Remove the belief that you walk in an aging form. Remove the belief that you walk within a limited period of time. These are all conditioned beliefs. The moment you do this, it is astounding how clear it becomes that they are nothing more than concepts. The whole world of concept begins to peel away. The onion skins of belief are removed one by one or ten by ten. Your mind begins to race with the possibilities. There is another self. And that other self is the undivided divine consciousness. The fourth dimension, which is all there is right here and right now. And there's a way of accepting that and letting it reveal itself as you accept it. The way is to reject all that comes to you in the third dimension. Stand still. Reject it. Reject the arm, and you'll find it easier to reject the withered arm. Reject the back, and you'll find it easier to reject the arthritic back. Reject the material self before it becomes a problem, and you'll find the problem will have no reality. The limit to which you learn to reject this world is limitless. It is a total rejection of the reality of any event in this world until you're walking in the knowledge that nothing is happening. Absolutely nothing is happening. And then you know that all that is happening is spirit itself, maintaining itself, being its perfect invisible self, everywhere. But that is I. I'm not apart from that spirit. That spirit is called our Father. The Father is the Spirit. And that Spirit, our Father, is myself, yourself, his self, herself, Jesus' self, the withered arm man's self. That is all there is. One invisible, infinite spirit. And you can feel it because you have dropped from the false consciousness, the divided consciousness, and the vacuum of this great stillness is filled as the wisdom of the Father flows forth. Then you know what no mind can know. It has been transcended. The knowledge you have then is not of a mind knowing truth, but of truth knowing itself. This is a strange self that we're discussing, and we're discussing it with minds, and those minds are all really the non-mind. But the experience transcends all discussion, and in that experience is the germ of light, self-revealing, which brings to you a conviction. This new experience, outside of form, outside of mind, outside of time, outside of place, this is the first awareness of my spiritual being. This is the divine self I feel. It is like nothing I had imagined. It has nothing personal. It hath no place to hang its head. It is not a material being. It is a completely new kind of being. No man has suspected. It is God's self. Being itself. And it is itself right now, whether we come into the realization of it or not. It is the only self. It is the universe. And its imitation has been that which we have accepted up until the time that the first kicking of the Christ within brings to us the realization that there is a higher me, a spirit,